You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for October 30th, 2015. This week, I'm going to talk about dabigatran use in women, the use of advanced practice practitioners in cardiac care, high-intensity exercise or burst exercise as a therapy in patients with type 2 diabetes, cannabis use in ischemic stroke in young people, and the science of the art of medicine. So first thing we know about dabigatran is that the drug has variable pharmacokinetic effects. And now we also know, of course, that there are gender-specific differences in cardiac care. So a recent study done by investigators in Quebec and published in Circulation Outcomes sheds light on the possibility that dabigatran efficacy is different in women. This was a population-based cohort study of more than 60,000 Canadian patients. The team did propensity matching to compare dabigatran-treated patients with warfarin-treated patients, both men and women. The key findings were that two-thirds of women took the 110 milligram dose of dabigatran, whereas men were evenly split between 110 and 150. Now, this was a Canadian study. Of course, in the U.S., we don't have a 110 milligram dose. This is a little interesting because at baseline, women patients had higher stroke risk and lower bleeding risk, but yet they took the 110 milligram dose more often. Women who took the 150 milligram dose compared to women who took warfarin had a trend towards lower stroke rates. And not unexpectedly, the women who took the 110 milligram dose had lower bleeding rates. So the key finding, or the take home, is that possibly when we use the 110 milligram dosage, we're under-treating female patients with atrial fibrillation. We have to remember that the RELY trial, only 37% of patients were female. So more data would certainly be useful, but this is an early signal or a clue at least. Now next is advanced practice practitioners. One thing that any doctor in clinical practice knows is that there simply are not enough doctors to see the increasing numbers of patients with cardiac disease. In my own practice group here, it's much easier to get a procedure scheduled than it is to get a patient seen in the office. So the bottom line is we need advanced practice practitioners, period. So a study published in JACC sought to determine whether the care delivered by advanced practice practitioners was the same or better or worse than doctors. Now, the researchers used the NCDR Pinnacle Registry database to compare adherence to quality measures. The results were basically that the advanced practice practitioners did fine. In fact, they did better in cardiac rehab referrals and smoking cessation. And by the way, I love cardiac rehab. I'm a big proponent. So it's hard to make much of these preliminary findings, but this is an important avenue of research, no doubt. Two comments here. One is that I'm extremely skeptical about measuring quality care by measuring adherence to quality measures. Are we measuring quality care, or are we measuring simply checking boxes on a spreadsheet? And the other, I want to just be totally honest about my bias about advanced practice practitioners. I think they're going to end up delivering fantastic care. I mean, recall that there is already a randomized controlled trial in atrial fibrillation and advanced practice practitioners. This showed that a nurse-led AFib clinic in the Netherlands did much better than physician-led care. And that was published in the European Heart Journal, and I'll leave that link. Next up is a study on high-intensity exercise. And I want to just tell you, this is one of my favorite studies. I love what I'm going to tell you about. But first, before I tell you about this study, let's just do a little review on the scientific method. So you have basic knowledge about a question, and you have a question as to which therapy is better, or whether a therapy works. Then you design an experiment in which one group gets the therapy and the other group does not. You try and evenly match the two groups, and then you look at the differences. This is exactly what Canadian researchers did, and the PI is a high school student. They asked a question, a very simple but important question: can burst exercise, high intensity exercise versus standard exercise, improve cardiometabolic risk factors in patients with type 2 diabetes? So this was about 35 patients or so in each group. They did sustained exercise, 60% average heart rate, 30 minutes, three times a week, versus a group that did interval training for the 30 minutes. And they found that hemoglobin A1C, LDL, HDL, triglycerides all got better in the burst exercise group. The reduction in hemoglobin A1C was nearly as good as adding another drug. And what does the young PI conclude about his results? Listen to this. In an exercise study, 3 months is good to show a proof of concept, but we need to have longer-term data. That is awesome. I look at a lot of abstracts, but I really, really like this one. So next up is cannabis and ischemic stroke in young adults. So I know what you may be thinking already, right? Mandrola, you're just picking this for page views. It's cannabis. And that was my gut reaction too. I was biased against even reading the study because a lot of times cannabis stories are pretty soft. But this one is sort of interesting. French researchers looked at young people under the age of 45 who presented with ischemic stroke. Now, this was over a 9-year period between 2005 and 2014. They found 334 patients. They reported their data as a research letter in JACC. 17% or 58 patients of the 334 were cannabis users. So they then did statistics and compared the two groups, cannabis users versus non-cannabis users who had ischemic stroke. And the key finding was that almost 45% of the patients of the cannabis use group had intracranial stenosis as the cause of their stroke, whereas only 20% of the non-cannabis users had intracranial stenosis as a mechanism. So sure, this is retrospective observational data, but it is possibly in accordance with potential mechanisms of stroke in cannabis use, such as cerebral basal constriction. Now, there's one thing to be certain about, and there will surely be more people using cannabis as the laws are relaxed. So it makes sense for us to be curious about early signals and studies like this. Finally, I want to point you to a really good feature on medical decision-making. Now, medical decision-making has never been more important. I mean, I just overheard my partner the other day. He was talking to a colleague, and I heard him say, I know we can do this, but the question is, should we do this? So Dr. Bob Harrington from Stanford interviews cardiologist and author John Brush on Dr. Brush's fabulous book, The Science of the Art of Medicine. This was a terrific interview, and it's a wonderful book. I've read it, and I love this topic. Dr. Brush writes clearly. He writes short. He distills difficult concepts into easily understood words and graphics. This summer, Dr. Richard Lehman of Oxford University told me that The Science of the Art of Medicine was one of his favorite medical books, and that says a lot. So that's it for this week. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.